Thank you, Richard. It's great. Do find me your questions. It's really, really helpful. Let me start off with a few, Richard. How then, as a church, can we help, particularly kind of teenagers, 20-somethings, in thinking through vocation? Where are we failing in that area?
Yeah, well, we're probably failing because we don't do very much of it at all. And therefore, actually, let's just start with the sort of let's say the teens. Actually trying to help our teenagers understand that God calls them to whatever they're called to is a crucial starting point. And just helping them to understand that it's not that God necessarily has, we know that God does have a plan for our lives, but we don't always know what that plan is till it's later discovered. But that their call is to glorify God and to serve him. And they can do that in a whole wide range of ways. And I think that's the most important thing, to affirm that. And rather than to think there's a very narrow range of ways in which we serve God. I think the broader the better at that point in particular. And then, of course, as we get on in later into kind of, you know, folk in our 20s and so on, I mean, maybe this is just a little bit of a bugbear of mine, but, you know, when do we, you know, I mean, maybe I mentioned this before, but I introduced the practice of praying for business people in my church. So it's not my church, the church where I was the pastor. It didn't mean we stopped praying for the doctors and the nurses and the medics. Of course not. I mean, you know, but we used to pray for the teachers too. But I realized we'd got into this little trap that every September we'd have all the teachers in the congregation stand up and we'd pray for them. Perfectly right, perfectly proper, entirely a good thing to do. But what I realized was we were only praying for certain groups. And so I then introduced the practice of praying for getting the business people to stand up in the congregation, and then getting people involved in working in the local area. So try and get away from the fact that only people who went into London counted, you know, all sorts of different ways you can do it. The entrepreneurs, you know, who runs their own business? I had several people in my congregation running their own business, and it was hard. It was very tough and demanding. And so I introduced the idea of praying for them.
In Presbyterianism, nobody stands up. So you're all right. here's a question. How can we help those who've been made redundant or are long-term unemployed and struggling to find work in terms of vocation and calling?
Yeah, it's a good question. It's an important question. And it is a question that is, you know, likely to have a degree of prominence over the next sort of 6 to 12 months as we come out of this dreadful pandemic. I am a believer in, I mean, some people see this as dreadfully secular. I am a believer in mentoring. I'm a believer in there was a thing in the Church of England for a while where several cathedrals set up enterprise centres. And mostly what goes on in Church of England cathedrals is dreadful, dire. But actually, that was a great idea. And set up an enterprise centre so that people could be linked with others. And so within the congregation, if there's somebody suffering from unemployment or the effects of employment, try and link them with a mentor within the congregation, someone who can help them through all of that. It's obviously terribly important that we understand all people are created in the image of God, and that people are of value to God, whether they are in particular paid employment at the moment or not. The one other thing I would say is the idea of human development. We'll come back to this when we look at Exodus 35 next time. The idea of education, acquiring skills, possibly a bit controversial here, but you know, the responsibility we have to acquire skills, to educate ourselves, the responsibility for our human development, encouraging people with that, helping them, supporting them, not just casting them out and saying, get on with it on your own. I do remember my mother. I lost my mother when I was a teenager. She died when I was 17. But I remember when I was 12 or 13, so I was nearly a teenager, I suppose 12 or 13, she completely retrained. How did she do that? Well, she, two nights a week, She went out to the local college and retrained to give her a professional qualification that she didn't have, so that she could better serve her God, her family, and the world. It's not easy. That wasn't easy. It's not straightforward. But I do sometimes wonder if we always look for the easy way out.
Do you think that there's sometimes a danger in us narrowly defining work? So work being paid employment, when actually 6 days for you labour and one day you rest. There's no kind of weekend in the Bible, actually. And so a wider view of work and vocation, actually, what much of what we do on Saturdays is work.
Yes.
And
I mean, it's
particularly for those at home, kind of mums at home. Do you want to expand a bit on that?
Absolutely. And it's terribly important. I mean, obviously, for most people, for a large part, but not all, of their lives, paid employment will be a significant feature. But it's terribly important that we recognize that serving our families is work, serving God is work, serving our communities is work, and that work does not just involve paid employment. I mean, that would be far too narrow a definition. And when you think, I mean, I know the Bible doesn't really have any concept of retirement, but I mean, when we, inverted commas, retire, actually what we're doing is we are moving from one form of work to another. And actually it's not just retirement is not a great word, actually, because it implies you're stopping at that work, but you are working in different ways with different objectives, different ends. You might be supporting your family more by caring for grandchildren. You might be undertaking more work in the church because you have the opportunity and that's your calling for that particular period of time. Might be the time you can, if you've been a business person, where you can do some mentoring of those who are starting out on that journey. All sorts of different ways, but you're absolutely right. And on the Sabbath thing, the rest, I mean, God worked 6 days and rested. So I think the principle that tells us, it's going back to Kuiper and his sphere sovereignty. In the same way we don't want the sphere of the state to dominate all other spheres, we also don't want the sphere of work and business to dominate all other spheres. There is a proper place for all of these things under God, and there is therefore a proper place for rest and for the service of the Lord. In other ways,
it's a good one. If all work is sacred, are there no boundaries for type of work? So, for example, betting shops. Give us some help in that.
Yeah, I think that's a tough question because I do think there are some boundaries. I think what's harder is to define how you would define those boundaries. I think that's the hard thing. So, for example, when I worked for Ernst & Young as an accountant, one of my audit clients, well, I worked in London in the city. I then worked on the South Coast in Ernst & Young Southampton office for about 3 years. One of the office's clients was a manufacturer of vending machines that vended tobacco. And the prime place where these machines were sold was developing countries. I couldn't really think of a sector I'd less rather be involved in. I mean, I probably could, but I mean, to me, there was almost nothing good about what this company was doing. Now, as it happens, I was never asked to work on that client apart from once, when I was asked if I would take responsibility for their pension scheme. Huh. I'm using it to illustrate the dilemma. I was one of the firm's experts in pension schemes. I wanted their employees to be cared for and properly provided for in the same way as any others. And so I gladly took on the responsibility of the pension scheme. But what about those individuals working in that place? I think I don't have a glib answer. I think you have to seek God's guidance in your own heart for what he is calling you to do. And if you are involved either just by accident of history or the way things have worked out in an industry you're uncomfortable with, then you probably should begin to look towards how you can change that situation. That may seem like a bit of a cop-out. I'm very reluctant to produce a list of things that are things that are unacceptable. I mean, some might be easy. You know, prostitution, trafficking. Many of us would put gambling in that. But here's a hard one. What about, I mean, I knew a faithful, I don't know him now, I knew a faithful, I had a client, faithful Christian man, you know, he was a wine buyer. And I like my bottle of wine as well, thank you very much. But where's the boundary? What about the destruction that that has done? So I think it's quite difficult to be very precise, but I think you have to ask the Lord for guidance for yourself. And if you feel ill at ease in the industry in which you are working, seek his help, seek his guidance, and begin to take some active action to move yourself in a direction that might be more obviously compatible.
Many of us have stumbled into our careers, and through no other thought than we applied for the job and we got it, and it's not what we imagined, and we're kind of stuck. How can this doctrine of vocation help us in that?
Yes, I don't think you did stumble into it, you see. I think you stumbled into it. And I've been there too. I mean, I remember applying for a job once where I thought I had absolutely no chance of getting it. But I did. and it was a very difficult job, actually, and caused me a lot of pain and stress and complexity. Nevertheless, actually, I didn't stumble into it. Actually, God brought that about. We do need to keep hold of the idea of the sovereignty of God. We do need to recognize that sometimes we won't see how God's sovereignty is at work, but that it is the sovereign Lord who sustains and in his providence guides and provides for the world. So I don't really believe in the stumbling into jobs scenario. I think what we need to be reminded is how the sovereignty of God works, and that he has called us to a particular place, not necessarily forever. Luther and Calvin both got into the trap of thinking you're called to one job forever. And that was probably a reflection of the times. I don't think you're called to one thing forever. I think you're called under God's sovereignty to exercise responsibility for that period in which you are called. So if you think you've stumbled into the job, I think what I'd encourage people to do is to come round to thinking, no, actually, God's put me here. I might not know why, but God's put me here. And my job is to serve him and glorify him so long as I'm in this place.
That's another question here. So in the thought of having kind of been in your work 3 to 4 years, that's the normal period of time when people move on from your company. Give us some help in thinking that through. If the culture of a place is where people stay 2 to 3 years and then move on, how does this work out from there?
I don't think I know the answer to that. I mean, industries and sectors vary a great deal. That would be one thing I would say. The second thing I would say is there is a significant cultural shift over the last 20 years. I mean, I've done I've probably done sort of 3 or 4 major jobs in my life. And for someone of my age, that's probably slightly more unusual. But I've come to realize that the idea that you're called to work in one place forever is not necessarily the case. So you're going to have differences in sectors. My son works in IT. 3 years is a long time. In other places, it won't have the same expectation. I think what you have to do is constantly go back to the Lord. It's a spiritual exercise. Constantly go back to God. Lord, am I being kept fresh? Lord, are the skills that you have given me being used for good in this place? Lord, am I as a person developing through the skills and responsibilities you've given me. Lord, is there any other particular direction you'd want me to go? And I don't think God answers with a snap of the fingers, usually, might do sometimes. I think it's more through a subtle process of other Christians, other people, conscience in our own hearts. But that's only possible if we first have got the spiritual relationship with God right. If you don't bother praying in order to ask the Lord, then you can't really expect him to answer. So you've got to get those things right.
Okay. There's no more questions, unless you want to fire one quickly. We'll draw stamps. It's very, very helpful stuff. Can I just push you back to that 20-something? They've done a degree in, let's say, one of those really useful degrees like history. And the average Christian say, well, why not do teacher training? They don't know what to do on that. Give us some help for graduates.
Yeah, right. Well, you've given me an opportunity to say a few other things. I do a lot of teaching now at university level. But you know, folks, I'm just an ordinary guy. I was brought up, I was born in central Manchester, and I was brought up in all my teenage years in the mining villages of South Yorkshire. And those of you who might remember my slightly rude, snarky comments of a couple of sessions ago about the role of the state and the role of the government, that's because I saw the state of the local mines and the dependency on the state that had generated. And I said to my dad, I'm going to university. No one in my family had ever been to university. I said to my dad, I'm going to university. And I remember his comment to me. He said, oh, how are you going to get there? Which bus are you going to get? Won't it take a long time? Dad, I'm not staying here. I'm not going to university from home. I'm going somewhere else. And I suppose I do want to go back to our young graduates, our 20-year-olds. I want to say, have aspiration. Have aspiration for our teenagers as they head off to whatever calling it is they're going to discharge. And for when you come out, don't be bound by your subject. A university education, if it's open to you, it's not open to everybody. It's not better than any other. It's just different, but it teaches you to think. It doesn't matter what the subject is, but it teaches you to think, and it teaches you how to ask questions and how to respond to questions. You know, the fact that you've got, my wife has got studied at college and university modern languages. I have trouble speaking English, never mind foreign languages. But the assumption when she left college from her father was, you will either be a teacher or a bilingual secretary. It was a completely narrow view. So I think, Paul, what I want to say to the young grads coming out is, the world's your oyster under God. Don't get boxed in. Take advantage of all of those opportunities the Lord has given you. Don't abuse them, but don't denigrate them either. And allow God to guide you and shape you. And you may have to be reshaped from time to time. I've had to be reshaped on a number of occasions, mainly because the process of sinful decline continues on a downward trajectory. You know, and I have to be constantly reminded of my need for salvation and redemption and all the rest of it. But, you know, you may need to be reshaped from time to time. Embrace that as God's guidance. That's probably not a very good answer, but I just want to try. I would just encourage them to sort of, you know, embrace it under God. That's the key.
Richard, thank you very much. Would you close in prayer and then we're done?
Delighted. Thank you, everybody, for listening with such attentiveness. And I look forward to seeing you all next time.